has it all begun? They're teaching you how to walk, but you're already on the run, little one. What you gonna do, little one?
We're acoustic all over ourselves this morning.
And we've been acoustic, all right. Oh, welcome to We the People. So we're operating with one less computer today. Bill and I have been sick all week. Bob's lost his mind. And we have two guests who are an hour early. So obviously they're the only people who know what's going on in the world.
Oh, and to make the
we'll
day
have to defer to them.
To make the day complete, Bruce called 3 hours ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I forgot it's daily savings time.
Yeah, that got us a few times.
Well, I was up coughing last night. I thought I'd go change the clocks. What the heck? I was already walking around. So, yes, it's the perfect day. 6th of November.
November.
And on the check for church this morning, I wrote October, so hopefully they can cash that. I realized it after the guy took it away. I was like, oh, well, there you go. I got the day right. I got the month wrong. Good grief. Well, and we had a little variation in the music, so live it up, huh? We'll try really hard not to make any gross phlegm noises, but we can't guarantee.
Speak for yourself.
Can't guarantee there won't be coffee.
I got a whole lineup on me right now.
I know
now.
Bill is all lined up to be a terrible mouth breather. I'm like, just make sure you don't like breathe into the microphone. Nothing worse than just wishing they would stop it. So my name's Aaron Ryan. After all that,
and I'm Bill Cudiff.
And I'm Crazy Bob Martin.
Yeah, Bob's not sick yet, so I guess we didn't get it here. We were trying to pin it on somebody, but we don't know where it came from.
And then it didn't matter after that.
We hardly got any trick-or-treaters Monday night, but when it was too late for them to show up, 10:30, something like that, all of a sudden, boom, we were sick. So I don't know what that was all about. We handed out candy and everything, so it wasn't like the.
Did you eat too much candy?
No, really, because we pretty much gave most of it away. We only got a handful of kids.
The kids scored big. Yeah, the ones that did show up, they scored.
Yeah, it started to rain. Can you believe that?
Just take the whole bucket.
Kids are so weak these days, man. It used to rain. It was like, let's go. Yeah, your kids went. Okay. Yeah, Kay's kids. Yeah, kids did too. I don't know, but
rain
now
stop you.
Come rained on. A little. Psh, kids
one,
are gone.
One shot the year to get free candy. A little rain's going to stop you.
I know,
dude, sister.
Go figure.
Yeah.
So let's see. Shifting gears, we're going to talk a little bit about the WikiLeaks situation. And if you haven't been following that, I actually don't even know what to tell you. Hey, what do you say to that?
Just came out of a coma.
There are people who actually think that this is all just a bunch of hype. The whole email thing, just hype. But Mr. Bruce Moran, who's a national security advisor, he's gonna help you with that. He consults with the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of State, Commerce, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, House Committee on Foreign Affairs, Joint Economic Committee, Senate House Committees on Banking and Finance. He's the man.
Yeah.
And Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. So he can be in charge of all of us today.
You're the man.
No pressure.
All
no,
right.
No pressure, Mr. Moran.
Why, thank you. As we know, there's very troubling and serious problems surrounding the DOJ-FBI investigation. So where would you want to start? You started at so many places.
I think we pretty much disclaimered ourselves on that one. Ourselves on that one. I think we're not qualified.
Yeah. Well, what we really have to look at, and I think it's the best place to start, is that the Secretary of State, she's claiming no fault, and all the fault lies on her because she's responsible for the server and her devices and her staff and the entire State Department. When you look at 30,000 emails being the bleach bit, that causes alarm. So you're trying to figure out, well, if Trey Gowdy needed information for his investigation on Benghazi and other House committees and Senate committees were looking at different things for other areas of concern, we have to conclude that when you see 60,000 emails, I mean 600,000 emails appearing on Uma's server when she already testified, we have a concern about perjury. So,
yeah, how much trouble is she in right now? I mean, is this looking like maybe she could get indicted?
Yeah, I think there needs to be more disclosure. There's a lot of things that need to be done in that case. We need to open up a full-fledged FBI investigation. Some are calling for the Clinton Foundation. They think there's pay to play there. You know, that's one of the things. But
you mean,
if you just
they're not worth millions of dollars to give speeches?
Pardon?
They're not worth, what was it, $12 million to give a speech? I mean, I've heard some pretty good speeches, but I got to tell you,
$12 million bucks, man. That's
a tough sell.
That's a barn burner right there.
Unless it involves the words "and you will get."
From my perspective, as we're doing an investigation, not as a prosecutor or not as a the attorney general who actually makes the final decision if you're going to pick a grand jury or a special prosecutor. I want to look at it as a pure and simple national security matter. What needs to be done? Well, if we look at it in that, there needs to be a complete forensic study done or audit. And what does that do? You have to go to every department and agency once you find the connection to HUMA and find out what information was sent to each of the staffers and Hillary Clinton, so you can recreate gaps in the information that's missing from the bleach bit.
Now, if HUMA had it, it had to have originated with Hillary, is that correct?
Well, the originations can be multiple areas, then it gets to Hillary or back and forth. So you have to make a discovery. That's what the discovery process, due process, or due diligence on her part of not disclosing it has to be done. So what am I actually saying? It can go to her or from her, and then it can go to in between her staffers and back to her. And what was bleach bit, we really don't know. So if we find out there are areas or gaps missing in her information that were bleach bit, we have to go to each of the agencies, each of the departments. So you go to the CIA, you go to the DOD, you go to DHS, you go to the FBI, and you find out where, it even includes the FBI, because they do co-work with the ATF, they do work with the Treasury Department, so when the information's traveling back and forth, it gets classified at certain levels, confidential, secret, top secret, and special access program.
Now, did
so you
she want have...
to find out where they went, how they got there, and how they got back to her, and then what happened on with Yuma's side. It also could be happening on Cheryl Mills' side. It could be happening on Heather Samuelson's side. They haven't gone that far in a complete forensic investigation. How is these emails being transmitted back and forth? Then some ended up on Chelsea's, computer. She got information.
Well, so she had a security
reading. We really don't know, and that's the question.
They were all part of the wedding plan. That must have been the wedding planning part.
What was the security? I mean, obviously, HUMA didn't have the same security clearance that Hillary had, did she?
Oh, she had a secret security clearance, yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, she was working at the State Department.
And you know, the one part I haven't looked into, but how did a whole copy of her email cache wind up on Anthony Weiner's laptop? Was she also using the Clinton Foundation or the ClintonMail.com server?
Well, that's part of it, but what I'm trying to convey here is, yes, that's a problem. That's a serious problem. National security problem did that create?
Right, but if she was state, wouldn't
that... information going to her, and she puts it on another non-secure source, where did that go? And then where did it go from there? So you got to trace this in so many different directions.
Sure, sure.
It's not a simple matter. Here's a problem, too. In providing the information to the FBI in initial investigation, they kept procrastinating, pushing the ball down the field until it got closer to the election. Then they put pressure on FBI Director Comey to make some kind of a response. Well, he gave a response, and then, as it was found out, it launched another investigation. So they kept pushing the ball. Now they want it to go the opposite way. They want to get a firm conclusion quicker, faster. But you can't do that with the FBI investigation. Why is that? Because you can't tell people what the evidence is, and it can be compromised, or there's people at the other end of the evidence, people who may testify, or people whose lives are at stake. You know, you can't come forth with FBI investigation and say what's going on. Because that way, you give the evidence to the defendants and to the prosecutors and to the plaintiffs to argue about that it was already exposed. And you can make that negligible and throw it out of court. Now, so the FBI has to be very sure about what they're going to release and how they're going to release it and when they're going to release it. They just can't, you know, for the Democrats wanting to release stuff, you can't say. You can't release evidence.
No, not if it's in an investigation.
No, it doesn't work like that.
You know what the problem is then? You know, they pushed it and pushed it and pushed it till they thought they'd get it past the election. All of a sudden, right before the election, the investigation, you know, comes back to them. And then they want a quick result. You just can't do it. It's not professional. These people are highly professional in the FBI, you know, and they have a lot of integrity.
Well, don't you think they did kind of push the first investigation a little bit? I mean, that thing wasn't very long at all, and they just came back with...
I think it was possibly for political expediency purposes, because the election was coming up. But since they did it that way, they're also at fault for the exposure they put themselves under for having another part of the investigation come up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oopsie. Yeah.
They compounded their problem.
You run the risk of having those kinds of things. We need to take a really quick break. We're chatting here with Bruce Moran. We're talking about more about the fabulous never-ending joy of Hillary's email scandal. And if you think it's just because they sent, you know, emails to people who shouldn't have gotten them and all that, you really need to do a little more digging. There's a lot more to it than that. You can find all the information that we're discussing with Mr. Moran at wethepeopleradio.us. And we'll be back in 2 minutes. One in a million. Yep. Who would have thought?
Hey, Bruce.
Fight an election, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, Bruce, earlier you were saying it's very difficult to piece all this together, but aren't all the emails, they're all dated. They all have marks on them as to where they came from. A forensic guy could go in and piece all that back together by date and know who said what to who and when and all that.
Yes, sir, that is the problem. You can't rush an FBI investigation that does a complete forensic study or audit.
And you're talking thousands and thousands of emails there.
That's right, because they have to all be properly handled, shared, reviewed, marked, dated, secured, stored, deleted, and then destroyed. So that
right.
You have to see who did all those different things.
Now, we were talking earlier offline here. How does an email go from a government server, a private, secured government server, to a cell phone that's not secured. I mean, how is that even possible? How do they do that? Because I thought in most cases, if you were working on a secured government server, you can't transfer any information to a private phone or a private server, can you?
That's exposed. Yeah, we call that the endpoint. That's an endpoint device, a tablet, a phone. Those are completely exposed. And for staff and her employees for the Clinton Foundation running the server, you have a lot of exposure there, including their family and friends, because you can come in through that. So if you're an espionage group, okay, or a professional hacker, or a foreign government, or a foreign corporation that needs information on technology,
but didn't
Uma, defense, they but, can come in through all the devices.
Right, and I understand a hacker could pull that off, but I mean...
Oh, no, an espionage group can come in and you wouldn't even know they're there.
But what about Uma? How does she... Did she transfer... didn't she say that she downloaded her phone to her husband's computer to back up her contacts and everything accidentally got transferred? Is that even possible to go from a government to a private computer? Can she do that?
You can do it any time. She could have took a flash drive.
Oh.
And just took a flash drive and downloaded it. She shouldn't even brought the flash drive out of the State Department, though.
Right. There you go again.
Yeah. Did the
smuggling
and, of course, I mean, I'm kind of assuming that these people all sign some sort of or take some sort of class or, I mean.
Well, they signed.
Did they sign documents?
Classified information in the first place.
Right, and they understand that.
They also signed on to supervise it. They also signed on to be the authority over it. And the number one authority was Hillary. And as you look at that, I can give you a pretty good example. I think this pretty much tells the story. Remember when she was talking about Colin Powell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it was his idea for this whole thing?
She said Colin Powell, you know,
he used his,
kind of... got her suggesting that she can run with that with Colin Powell. You know, Colin Powell never said she can have a private server in her own, in her basement, in Jeff Acquitted. That's a different story. Her responsibility as Secretary of State has never been really looked at. And what do I mean by that? Her ability to be the sole responsible person for the entire State Department. How many people you think are in the State Department and what kind of capacities are they working? It's enormous. Do you two have any idea?
No. I know there are 360,000 in the Veterans Administration, so...
Okay, just the State Department has 68,000. Okay. But let's get back to a point we were talking about prior to the commercial break. It's about diplomats in the field, ambassadors,
sure,
consular generals. And each mission, each embassy, each consulate, you have people who work for the intelligence community, people who work for the military community, and they're running different kinds of programs out of there. Also, there's economic people and people who are specialists in the affairs of the particular country. All of them are using classified information. Now, as we were talking about earlier, before that, we have to take a step back to almost the beginning of our conversation. The FBI has to trace all these embassies and all these consulates that were transferring information back and forth to her about what was going on the ground, what was happening, hot spots, high-risk areas, and what was transpiring for them to email them that, and how did it get to their servers, and how come it wasn't properly secured. So you see what I'm saying? A complete forensic study has to go all the way back,
sure,
and check each embassy, each consulate. And that's a lot of information that needs to be gone over if this information is out there. Now let's get to another area within those areas. In each of these high-risk areas, you might have special operations groups working. Those are friends of ours. That's why I'm working on this particular area. You have people that are in covert operations that work for, our intelligence agencies. Then you have the military special operation groups. and they're out there. So if that information's being transmitted and it goes through the State Department, which it usually does because there's a military or a intelligence liaison, then it goes directly to where? The White House, and it goes directly to the State Department because they're coordinating activities.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know if they have to get somebody or they have to run into the embassy or the consulate for protection if they're out in the field. See what I mean? So if there's that kind of exposure and they have emails on HOMA's handheld that was put in a flash drive or however it got to Weiner's computer, we don't know, but however it got there, what kind of exposure was there? And now you have to go all the way back and check. Now that you check the embassies and now that you check the consulates, you have to go back to the source agencies where the information was coming from. You're talking about the CIA, the Department of Defense, or if it was a joint operations run by, say, ATF, DEA, FBI, and CIA, and doing a drug bust someplace, and they're working on some heavy cartel money and drugs coming through. Could have been maybe Afghanistan or maybe in Mexico or South America near Colombia-Ecuadorian border, or moving through Costa Rica and the southern border in there. There's all these possibilities. That's why I say it's mind-boggling to kind of figure out how this information and what transpired and what was given to her. And now we're talking about exposure. Remember she said her server was not hacked?
Yeah.
Yeah, she even said that, I believe, in the debate.
Yeah, like how would she, well, for starters, how would she know that? Isn't that the whole point of hacking?
Although there's, okay, I'll let you carry on, and then I'll talk. I'll give you
okay.
Different kinds of
yeah, that's true. We should take a quick break.
Are they still saying that they don't believe that her computer was hacked?
No, even former Secretary Gates back in February of this year said it was either the, I think, Russians, Chinese, Iranians. There's a high probability back then. Reason why Comey didn't come in, because you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know if it was hacked. Mm-hmm. Now you have different ways of being hacked, okay? And my concerns are kind of with the people I work with and who's out there in the field. It's military, intelligence people, and all the kinds of operations that are out there. If they're compromised, they're dead.
Oh, sure. Sure. I bet that really makes them feel good when all this is going down and they look back on it and
yeah.
think, holy cow, okay, these guys know who I am now.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure, they're sweating
bullets.
It's not only
them, it's their families. So
sure.
If, say, some military personnel are stationed in Signalia or in up in Germany in Stuttgart or, you know, Frankfurt, and they have to go out, and their kids are going to school, and they're compromised, and they're out in a mission, and their kid gets kidnapped, blackmailed, and ransomed, or killed.
Yeah, and that's just not a far cry from possible.
No, that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it happens, and with stuff like this, it probably...
Let's go back 30 years ago, 40 years ago. There was a fellow named Eldridge Ames.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he was a CIA operative.
Yeah.
And he compromised our operations overseas. It's up to 100 people had been, you know, had some problems with him. I think at least 10 of our agents were killed. And that's before there were cell phones. That's before there was computers.
Oh, yeah.
So now when you have these devices, that's how quick these people can be killed. Because the information is instantaneous to get somebody there in the field. And they'll go get them with their operatives and kill them right away.
Sure. And who knows what they're doing with it planning forward.
Right. Or compromising or blackmailing them. Now let's take it a step back. Now we're talking about the State Department. How about getting information on people in the State Department and blackmailing them here in the United States and their families?
Sure. To get,
and
them,
then,
get them information.
Yeah, get information from them.
Mm-hmm.
Because she exposed that, and then they got into their information in their particular... assignment in the State Department for what desk they're working on. So they might be working on, say, the Yemen desk or the, I would say, the Colombian desk or the
sure.
Ecuadorian desk. There's information in there that's really top secret because people on the ground, as you know, operating and coming in and out all the time. So that's the kind of concerns that I have personally, knowing that there's exposure here and great risk involved. That's why I'm talking to you right now. because those are people we all know and have been in those fields of operation over the years.
Sure.
So that's, you know, Chuck was on last time also, and Chuck ran embassy operations around the world under Colin Powell. So he's fully well aware of, you know, these problems and the kind of security that needs to be done. He designed the 10-acre compound that's still in effect today to protect the embassies. That's all the security, all the personnel, all the technology. That's why we know what we know. It's not that we're, you know, coming in from the outside. It's inside out and outside back in, knowing the new technologies that can be used, what can be deployed. When I talked about the technology during Colin Powell's time, it was different than the technology during Hillary Clinton's time. That was a five-year window. And when Colin Powell was in office, we're talking about his administrative responsibilities. I think at that point he had called on George Tenet to change all the, well, a vast portion of the computers at the State Department to be up to snuff and protection. I think it was some 44,000 computers Colin Powell changed over. He threw the State Department people, IT people, on the side. He brought the CIA people from George Tenet to run it and change it around. I don't think people understand her administrative responsibilities in that way.
Now, let's follow up on a little bit more of that on the other side of the break here. That's kind of interesting,
great.
And that's something nobody's talking about.
Absolutely.
Which means we probably should know about it. We'll learn about it one day, but it'd be more fun to learn about it now before the election. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. I'll tell you what, with some of this...
Secrets that are well known.
it looks a lot like the Mafia, doesn't it, though, when you start looking at the whole Clinton thing?
Sure. That's what Colin Powell said it was. Her little group of people. He called it that. So, in one of his emails that WikiLeaks released. So it's kind of interesting. You know, evidently... what we were talking about earlier was Colin Powell and his responsibility as the administrator for the State Department replaced 44,000 laptop computers to make sure that the State Department was secure. And he brought in the CIA. He talked to George Tenet, who was the CIA director at the time, and they replaced the people that were at the State Department with CIA people to secure the system. So, as I was saying, subsequent to that time, you had what's called NSA Suite B. It's a encryption device that came into play right after Colin Powell got out of office. And as you know, most of the people on the Hill are using BlackBerries around that time when she was in office. And you can have those secured. It's also called FIPS-2, which is another part of the encryption standard, Federal Information Protection Standard for it. At that time, it was 1. And later in her part is holding it. So if you're asking me a question, the information was available to her to not only secure all the handheld devices at the State Department, but her own and her staff's. And she had all the opportunity when she first signed on as Secretary of State to make those inquiries, what was the necessary means to protect herself, her staff, her server, and her, you know, department itself, and I don't think the devices are still protected to this day with the NSA Suite B, you know, with encryption. So we'd have to take a look at that and what areas aren't. But from my understanding, it's not.
So. What's the... Okay, so in real life, let's pretend it's not Hillary Clinton who gets to write her own rules. Let's pretend that it's normal, right? The FBI is really the FBI. The Department of Justice actually knows something about justice. If a Secretary of State did this in, like, normal time, what would happen? I mean, what's supposed to be happening? I think we all know it's supposed to be something bad, but I don't think any of us really know what the rules are.
Well, the rules are written out in executive orders and mandates in the Espionage Act, the HISS Act, the Computer Fraud Act. It's all there. So if you go in there and read what was followed, what was not followed, standards, rules, regulations, procedures, it all is laid out there. So even the executive orders, which are handed down from the President of the United States, they actually dictate what you had to do to protect that kind of information.
Well, they don't, in those rules, they don't leave a lot for interpretation. It's pretty cut and dry, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So
when you have an executive order, then you go to sanctions. Okay, you can't go to criminal. Once there's a sanction approved, then you go to what you were talking about later, Aaron. That's the, you know, how do you investigate it, what rules were broken, you know, the HISS Act, Espionage Act, or the rules of archive keeping, you know, what? How do you keep classified information in a safe place?
Sure.
In a SCIF, as you know, is a place where you keep it, but I don't think Andrew Weiner's computer has a SCIF wrapped around it, so.
Yeah, that blows my mind that any of that was on his computer. That right there,
yeah,
that's way outside
the
bounds.
Yeah, I think he's in terrible trouble.
Yeah.
And you know the really...
let me rudely interrupt you for a second.
Do it.
Everybody else who was communicating to her from the staff, if they find out, that is also. So let's take another step back in July and August. We have immunity given to five people.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about that.
No.
Yeah.
Don't you find that unusual?
Yeah. What was the excuse for that, or were we ever given one? That seems to not be necessary either.
Well, Cheryl Mills was one of the, you know, heads of all of them. You had that whole idea. But what I'm trying to convey here, it's unusual to give five people immunity in the FBI. So if you do that, what's the scope of immunity? Does that hold for a House or a Senate investigation? Or are they excluded? It appears, you know, it's excluded in some way. So we really don't know. And now, here's the second part of this, which is really interesting to me, as a, you know, looking at the investigation part. Now that another part of this investigation is open up, I don't know if their immunity holds true for that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think everybody's on the line now.
Sad face.
Yeah, that's why it's so big.
Yeah, well, and, you know, like, we all know this with emails. Anybody who's ever gotten a new email program and it's set up in conversation mode, where everybody that you communicated with on that topic all gets linked together, and you can't find a darn thing because it's like a giant ball of hair, you know, it's just all tangled up in there. All these emails, one was sent to somebody who was sent to somebody who was forwarded from somebody. All those people are now brought in. When you start investigating it, you got to sort that out.
What does that mean for some of them?
Sure.
It means jail time. Are they going to say something? Yes.
Well, the awesome part is these people don't have enough horsepower to get immunity.
Yeah, but they're
and all
not
going to
want
to.
They're not going to want to go down. If
I
the
know,
top
isn't that awesome?
Down. So I think it's. I think it's going to be wrestling the ship.
The squealing is going to begin shortly.
Yeah. So if that happens, we don't know yet. I'm looking at it as a pure investigative, discovery side.
Sure.
That starts to make some headway, and then you'll have to have the FBI go in there and start talking to a lot of people about these different ways these emails are being handled, shared, secured, deleted, stored, because there's archival information that needs to be there that may have not been there, and that's the head of the State Department's area, the director of the area that stores information. So he gets called on the rug, too.
Nice. You
so
have
a lot of problems.
Well, you also have a note in here, and I don't want it to get missed. You have a note that you had sent to us that's posted. It's also been indicated hearsay that close to 100 FBI agents threatened to resign or place letters of resignation on Comey's desk. Where does that all come from?
I've heard information like that myself, but it's hearsay. But why would that be hearsay? You know,
yeah.
If there's problems inside the bureau, we call it the bureau itself under J. Edgar Hoover. So if the bureau has problems internally, we don't know exactly what it was. We can talk about a couple areas, you know, that may have caused it. You know, one we just talked about is immunities.
Sure.
How does you know, the FBI guys are out there and they're doing an investigation. All of a sudden, there's five immunities. They're going, "Whoa, what's this about?"
Yeah.
And that's, you know, high important people that need to be investigated, and now they're given immunity. But, well, okay.
So let's.
And what would be the next one?
So let's say that they.
Agreements.
They do.
That's like crazy and as crazy can be.
We have to do one more break here, sorry.
Okay, sure, we'll cover that on the other side.
When we come back, though, I want to know, like, in...
I got another couple things to talk about in relationship.
I want to talk about those non-disclosure agreements.
I want to know about those, too.
Do they mean anything?
I'm curious about that. All right, we'll be... we don't have time for, you know, news and breaks and stuff, you know, darn it. It cuts into our action.
Well, I can actually move the news around a little because...
I can move the news around because the computer's broken, so woohoo!
Well... I can still play it off of the website, but I can control when it starts.
Nice.
It's coming off the computer. It usually fires at the top of the hour.
Oh, it usually cuts us off. Yeah. Oh, nice.
We're inside baseball here.
The inmates are running the asylum. That's so great. Love when that happens. It was worth being sick all week. We will be right back. We're here chatting with, I guess I forgot to tell you the last couple times, we're here with Bruce Moran, who is a national security advisor, and I'll give you a little bit more on his credentials when we come back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time to stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Baby, you left me defenseless. I'm on.
Be it. All right, so we were talking, you know, here in the studio, Bruce, we were kicking around, okay, if they've signed non-disclosure, does that mean that the FBI gets all their information, or we can't know any of that, huh?
The agents that sign it can't say anything.
So it's just a big question mark. We don't know if they're getting information from those people, or if they've all just been given a pass.
Oh, no, no, no. What I'm trying to convey here is more of they would send a supervisor of them, or call me would go before Congress. They wouldn't disclose anything. I don't think an FBI agent swears an oath to the United States of America not to disclose anything.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you have them sign a non-disclosure agreement?
Yeah, if they've taken the oath, same with Secretary of State. She's taken the oath to keep this stuff secret.
So, how would an agent feel if he had signed that?
Like he wasn't trusted?
I don't know. Like he was stabbed in the back or slapped in the face.
Yeah.
Because they want to lock anything down that was held in that interview with her staff and herself personally.
Isn't that crazy?
Do you recall any other non-disclosure agreements that happened around something like election time?
No.
No.
Okay, let's go back to Benghazi. That was in September. Congress was on vacation, and so was the Senate. They came back, and they're dealing with Benghazi. But subsequent to that time, they had non-disclosure agreements signed by the people in the State Department, the CIA, and the DOD. Did you know that?
No, but how great is that?
So there's a correlation. I don't know how rich that is or how bad that is, but that was right before the election of President Obama the second time.
Again.
Well, that also got him off the hook to testify against Congress, right?
Right. You know, well, here's my point. It forestalled it.
Okay.
Well, after the election.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
yeah. What else was going on at the time? You had, I don't know if you recall Gregory Hicks. He was a second in command under Ambassador.
Stevens?
Yeah. He's a second in command at the Tripoli embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And he came forward, but they sidelined him. And he testified before a House committee. I don't know if you recall that. So yeah. He came forward, but what do you usually do if you come forward to something like that in a government agency? Where do you usually go?
You go away because they don't want you around after that, right?
No, you have recourse.
Who do you have recourse with?
The Inspector General's office.
Or what? Office of Special Counsel? Either or?
No, each department has an inspector general.
Right.
And the president appoints them, they're approved by the Senate.
Right. But if people go,
okay, then they go and talk to the inspector general about these kinds of matters. Did you know that there wasn't one in place in the State Department at the time?
Oh, well, that's convenient.
But then again, the inspector general takes that information right to the.
They had an interim one who was a ambassador, but he was never approved to go in and handle anything of that nature.
Oh, mm-hmm. No kidding!
Yes, you have to have an accounting, auditing, financial analysis, law management, investigative, some kind of background to give you that capability. Also, there's a conflict of interest if you're an ambassador and already in the State Department. That
sure.
Could be somebody outside the State Department. But he's already in the State Department.
Yeah, so
he's already served in that capacity.
Right.
So it has to be somebody totally from the outside coming in as an inspector general.
But then you have to have an attorney general that's willing to act on that information, which
can be.
We don't
it
really
depends
have.
Depends on. Yeah. That's right.
Unbelievable.
But. You see where it gets bogged down? Right at the start, you sign non-disclosure agreements. There's not really a recourse in the State Department itself. And then you'd have to, you know, do what Gregory Hicks did and testify and get sidelined.
Yeah, and that's usually what happens. You speak up, and, you know, they're going to have to do this as a group. You know, the people who really know things that are slightly below the radar, they'll have to pop up and, you know, insist that they be heard. And if they go together, they'll do better than if they go
independently. I would also like to add that it was the Defense Department that didn't have an inspector general, too.
At the same time? They were missing one?
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Labor, Interior.
And NVA had a temporary as well.
Yeah.
Because their guy got busted for indecent exposure in his own glass conference.
By law,
center.
The president is supposed to appoint one within 210 days. That's the Inspector General's Act. So.
All those pesky rules.
Bruce, thanks for coming on. I mean, we could talk for another hour about this.
Ending our conversation?
Yeah, we have to be done.
We've got
on the phone, so we're goofing off a little bit. But
maybe we could have you back after the election.
Yeah,
because I think that's going to put a whole new light on this.
Sure.
Yeah,
well, my concern is, you know, the whole idea about national security is about individual sovereignty.
Yeah.
And about how we are citizens have a separation of powers. And then within the separation of powers is the, you know, Supreme Court, Congress and House, and then the executive branch. Definitely you have to look at how it's going to impact the Supreme Court and where we're going with that with this election.
Yeah, over the cliff.
And how our individual sovereignty is being protected or, you know, not.
Or not.
Then you have states' rights you have to be concerned about. And does the federal government, as we're talking about today, have overreach in a lot of different areas? And how do you handle that? You know, so those are my concerns. You know, I think people should vote their conscience here on, you know, how they want to get their elected official in.
I think they should vote for the person least likely to commit more crimes.
Pivotal a decision to make.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Moran. He's a national security advisor with Security Solutions Technology. You can find all that information about him on our site, wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back to discuss some voter fraud. Thank you, Mr. Moran. Bye-bye.
And indeed, you're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding. The news is next, followed by Hour 2 of We the People.